Pod Moth.
I can never get a joke right to save my life.
Well, you have to leave that to the professionals.
Like who me. Says? Something, something, what's the deal with grapes? They're
no,
grapes.
No, that's not the joke. You ruined it again.
What was
I
that?
Just told you this joke like 10 minutes ago. I said, what's the deal with raisins?
Oh.
They're just old grapes. I'm glad you think that's funny.
I think I just have a really stupid sense of humor, but I think that's fucking hilarious. welcome to Paranerds. My name's Erica.
My name's Jesse.
So yeah, welcome back. And Jesse has a story for me before I do the deep dive.
So I have a couple things. So you're doing the story of the Exorcist is what you researched.
Yes.
So I was looking at possession stories, which are horrifying.
What a theme.
I know. and I came across a couple articles about a man named Dr. Richard Gallagher. Have you heard of him?
No, but already I'm like, I don't want to see this guy because it makes me think of Shameless and the Gallaghers are all like really horrible people.
No, they're not. That's the whole point of the show is that they're not horrible. They're just struggling.
They're struggling, but I still don't want any of them as my doctor.
Yeah, no. Well, Frank is a pretty bad guy. Monica's pretty bad. Yeah, it's a good show. That's a fucking good show. I haven't thought about that show in a while. It's good. But no, it's not that Gallagher. Well, I was researching this guy and I came across a couple articles about him and I was like, this sounds really interesting. And then I found out that he wrote a book. And so I was like, who is this? I need to know more about Dr. Richard Gallagher. And he is an Ivy League educated board certified professor at Columbia University and New York Medical College. Currently working as a psychiatrist, and he also assists in exorcisms.
Oh, just as a side gig?
Yeah, as a side
okay.
gig. After
okay.
doing all this other stuff.
Freelance exorcism specialist?
Yeah, well, I liked his story because I feel like the problem with a lot of possession stories is that, hold up, I'm wearing this giant hat on my head, and I can barely hear you through my headphones.
That was not a good decision.
There we go. There you are.
Oh, sorry. I was wearing this comically large hat.
It's a good hat. It's a beautiful, it's my Boston hat. But I was saying, the problem with a lot of exorcism stories is that I think people, skeptics just say it's mental illness, right? They're like, it's not a demon.
Yeah.
That person's just mentally ill. So I really liked researching him because he is a professional psychiatrist and he wholeheartedly believes in demons and possessions. And not only does he believe in them, he helps the Catholic Church perform them.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's some passion.
So I wanted to talk about this before you got into your story because I think
yeah.
it's good, like, evidence that these things really happened and it's not just a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Gallagher grew up Catholic and he was described by his brother as an extremely intelligent person with a photographic memory. He claims he was someone who was always questioning his own faith. Although he was a Catholic, he describes himself as a man of science who did not believe in demonic possessions until one jarring encounter. One night, Dr. Gallagher awoke to the sound of his two typically calm cats just going completely batshit, and they were just started fighting each other in the middle of the night. He got up, he separated the cats, he went back to bed. The next morning, a local priest that he knew, showed up at his doorstep accompanied by a woman with long black hair and crazy eyeliner, like super goth chick. And this woman's name was Julia. Now, I'm not sure if her real name is Julia or that was just a pseudonym, but she is referred to as Julia. The priest explained that Julia thought she was possessed, and he wanted the doctor to basically evaluate her for any mental illnesses.
Just to rule that out before an exorcism is a possibility.
Exactly. Basically, Julia came to this priest and was like, I'm possessed. I need help. And the priest was like, you might be crazy. I'm going to take you to the psychiatrist I know. So Dr. Gallagher started meeting with her and talking to her and trying to figure out like why she was feeling like she was possessed. Turns out she was a Satanist. She claimed to be a high priestess of Satanism. And during their talk, Julia said, how'd you like those cats last night? She knew that the cats had been freaking out without him like ever telling her. And then there was many other times where she just mentioned things to him that she couldn't have known, like that his mother died of ovarian cancer. And she knew that. And that was his first indication of because she seemed pretty level-headed other than being like, I'm a Satanist and I'm possessed by a demon. But then when she started doing those things, he was like, all right, this is supernatural. Like, how do you know that? So he told the priest that he didn't find anything diagnosable in her. He said, like, she could have schizophrenia, but I can't be sure. Like, I don't know why she thinks she's possessed. But she was displaying supernatural capabilities.
But it's not like she was outwardly showing, like, delusions or anything.
Well, while he was interviewing her just as a psychiatrist, no. Like, he didn't see anything like that. She just said that, like, she kept losing time. Like, she would just black out. And when she came to, her friends would tell her that she was speaking in a guttural voice to them all of a sudden. So he told the priest, I don't know if she has anything like mental illness. It doesn't seem like it. She's doing all the supernatural stuff. So the priest decided she's possessed. We're going to do exorcisms. And so the doctor, he started attending the exorcisms because he was like, this is weird. I want to know what's going on. He saw her speaking strange languages in guttural voices, things being thrown around the room without being touched. One night he was talking on the phone because there was a series. She went through like months of exorcisms. I don't know how many exactly, but one night he was talking on the phone with one of the priests. Julia wasn't around. She was back home. But they both through the phone heard her guttural voice yelling, even though she was like miles away.
Wow. See, I always thought when it comes to receiving an exorcism that they, and probably because of movies, that generally they do it once, they complete it, and it's done.
Yeah. No.
Maybe twice.
No, he has more information about that kind of thing, and I'll get to that in a minute. Once one of the priests said that they saw her levitating during an exorcism, even though the doctor wasn't there during that time. But eventually Julia chose to end the sessions after a couple months of this, and she claimed that she did not have the willpower to do it anymore because she felt like a part of her enjoyed the abilities that, like, this possession was giving her because she was a Satanist. So she felt like because she couldn't renounce Satanism 100%, that the demon basically would never let her go. And they kind of felt the same way, that like, if you don't feel like that you can get out of it, you're not going to.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, the will has to be there.
Exactly. And he talks about that later too. But this didn't stop Dr. Gallagher from continuing his research, because after he like talked to her and saw this, he was like, oh my God, the Catholics were right. Like, there are demons.
Oh my God, the Catholics were right.
I know. So he now took a professional interest in demonic possession, and he's now part of the International Association of Exorcists, which has about 400 members, primarily Catholics. I don't think they're all Catholics in that association.
That's it?
400?
Yeah.
Well, for the official one, but there's others, right, people who do it. Dr. Gallagher's role in this is basically he just determines if a patient is exhibiting a possession or a mental illness before they begin the process of exorcising. And the Catholic Church, what?
You set up exercise. I know what you meant.
Exorcising. Before they begin to exercise. God forbid.
Fucking dangerous. Be careful in those treadmills.
Tell me about it. That's why I stay far away. The Catholic Church actually has a ton of criteria a person has to make before that they sanction an official exorcism. They have doctrines that say this.
Now, is that a matter of safety for the person who is being exorcised?
Yeah.
Or safety on behalf of the priest?
Safety on behalf of the person being exorcised.
Gotcha.
Because they want to rule out that mental illness. And I think Dr. Gallagher at one point said most of his job in this realm when he gets these jobs, because he usually just gets contacted by a priest and he says, we need your help. He said that most of his job is convincing people they are not possessed than actually performing possessions.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people that do contact churches that say they're possessed, a lot of them just have schizophrenia or something of the like.
No, I'm imagining when they go through with it, it's probably a situation where that person needs to sign a waiver, right?
I don't know.
I'm just thinking legal standards or whatever. I figure if you're going through something that could potentially leave you worse for wear.
Right. Well, there is the case of, it's the true story that the exorcism of Emily Rose was based on. Her name was Annalise something, and they did end up convicting the parents and the priest at the end of it, because she died during an exorcism, and the parents and the priest got convicted of manslaughter.
That's intense.
Yeah, well, she basically died of malnutrition, starvation, because she refused to eat. And they said, it's your responsibility as a parent to have taken her to the doctor and, got her to be force-fed. And they didn't do that. Because I think they took her to the doctor. I should reach the story more before I talk about it. But I know they took her to the doctor and they took her out because they felt like she was going to die in the hospital. And she kept ripping out her feeding tube.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up taking her out of the hospital so they could continue performing exorcisms, because they thought that was the only way she would live, is if they got the demon out. But they never did. She died.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess, there should be a waiver.
Well, I guess. I was just thinking the whole, it was the parents' responsibility to.
Yeah.
I guess that's because she's a minor.
No, she wasn't a minor. She was in college.
Was she? I haven't seen that movie in so long. I thought she may have still been in high school.
Well, the movie isn't completely accurate. But the true story, I'm pretty sure she was in college at the time. But I think because she was released from the hospital under her parents' supervision. So they were responsible for her during that time and she died.
Well, as we're going to find out shortly, it is often the case that the movie doesn't exactly depict the events.
Well, yeah. But these are some things that Dr. Gallagher said about possessions. He said possessions are not limited to Catholic or Christian people. The concept of demonic possession, they're not usually called demons in other cultures, but basically the concept of dark entities taking over a person appears in many, many different religions. Mm-hmm. So it's really not just Catholics.
That checks out.
Yeah.
That'd be so awful if it were this only happens to Catholics.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one thing that skeptics use. They're how do demons exist if this other religion doesn't believe in demons? And it's they still have a concept of something like a demon, even though they don't call it that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Religions are based on, I'm not going to say all religions, but they're based on stories, you know? That's what the Bible is, basically, a collection of oral stories that have been passed down for generations. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure somewhere down the line, there has to be a story about how an atheist got possessed.
Right. Right.
What did they get possessed by? Absolute bitter nothingness.
Gallagher says that he's met many other medical professionals that also have seen demonic possessions, but they don't want to go public for obvious reasons because they don't want to lose their career by, you know, someone saying, like, that's crazy. And because it's so, like, an obscure topic and something that's considered taboo, you know, some people might lose their careers for coming out and saying it. Dr. Gallagher is still gainfully employed. I checked his, I still have the tab open. You can, like, schedule a psychiatric appointment with him right now. He's still working fine, so.
Really?
Yep.
Are you interested?
I think he's in New York, so maybe not a little far.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good to know he's still practicing and still alive and kicking.
Yeah, and he recently wrote a book. It just came out last October, so.
What's the book?
It's called Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal.
Hmm.
It has 4.5 stars on Amazon, and it's only like $20. Kind of want it.
I think that'd be worth a revisit.
Oh, right.
Like, hey, remember that time we talked about Dr. Gallagher like 10 episodes ago?
I bet he has some stories, man. And, like, oh, yeah. I'm so interested in, like, the professional medical side of demonic possessions. Like, you don't hear that side of the story a lot. You hear the Hollywood version a lot.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm really interested in what he thinks.
Well, that's why I found this this exorcist thing so fascinating, too. But we'll get to that when it's my time.
Okay. So he's talking about how do people get possessed? And he says, quote, possession is not something that's going to happen willy-nilly to anybody. People don't have to go to bed worried that they're going to wake up possessed in the morning. There's a spectrum of attacks, but only the people who become possessed are invariably, and he says, I'm choosing my words carefully because there's a few exceptional cases, but usually they are people who have turned to, in a serious way to something evil already. If that makes sense. So in, like, Julia's case, she was already a Satanist.
But it doesn't have to be a spiritual evil.
No, he's, like, a lot of the times it's if you, like, give up. Like if your life's really hard and you're just, like, give up, kind
well,
of.
Well, that's a matter of, I guess it's just, like, the demons are, like, drawing in on that negative energy.
Right. Exactly. If you, like, let yourself succumb to, like, your negativity, that's one
way.
That's
some ghost adventure shit.
He also talks about, like, alcohol or drugs are also, like, can be something that is evil if you allow yourself to, like, turn to that.
So, like, demons are preying on all the millennials on the river drinking White Claws every summer.
No.
I'm kidding.
No,
I'm kidding.
Because that's me. Don't say that.
That's exactly why I said it.
No, he just means like alcoholism, stuff like that. Like
gotcha.
Being really, really into, or not into, but just letting yourself succumb to things that are not good for you is what makes you more vulnerable. Or he says, he also says in one way, he says witchcraft and magic can also lead to demonic possession, which I don't like that he said that.
No.
I thought that was wild.
I'm just laughing because I'm like, oh, if it's like giving in to things that aren't good for you, it's like, oh, well, you ate too many cookies and you're vaping too much, so you're about to get possessed.
No, if I was doing nothing but eating cookies and vaping too much, then I would be vulnerable to possession. But if I do other things that are still good for me, right?
Yeah.
That's what I take from what he said. I don't know.
I'm just exactly. Being goofy. You're fine.
Oh, yeah? Stop saying I'm possessed. I fucking hate it.
I know. That.
Danny
just
literally,
to make you
like,
really
an
paranoid.
Hour ago, he was like, I'm going to make cookies. So that really triggered me that you said cookies was possession.
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I said cookies because yesterday I texted Andy being like, I can't stop thinking about chocolate chip cookies. So he brought home like a Costco tray of like 25 of them.
Oh my God. I bet it costs like $2.50.
Not $250, like $2.50.
Yes, that's what I meant. It's Costco. Yeah.
No, it's bad. Like, he bought those yesterday and I've already eaten 6 cookies.
What, so. 6 cookies in 2 days? That's nothing. That's amateur hour.
Good. I can make a tray of cookies last longer than you.
Yeah, you can. I hope you're proud of that.
Well, I wish I wouldn't have said shit because you thought I was psychic or something.
Nah.
Because I said cookies.
Everyone loves cookies. That's like when people say that, I think it was a Chris Rock joke where he was like, why do people, oh, here I am, a stand-up comedian again. I told you I was. He was like, why do people say that black people love watermelon and fried chicken? Because he was like, you know who loves watermelon and fried chicken? Everybody! That's such a good point. Everybody. Who doesn't?
I love all food.
I'm a vegetarian, and if I saw fried chicken, I'm like, oh my God.
Dude, I know how you are.
Yeah, me and chicken, it's something. That's evil. Many, if I succumb to chicken nuggets, times, I will be possessed by a demon.
Many times after a couple drinks, if I have chicken nuggets near me, you're like, hey, give me one of those.
I'm a vegetarian until chicken nuggets are like in the picture.
That's fair. I think if I went vegetarian, like, chicken would be the hardest thing to give up.
It's those fucking nuggets, man. They're just so easy. Oh, here we go. This is what I was talking about Julia giving up, saying that she couldn't do this anymore because she felt that she couldn't give herself, like, over fully. Dr. Gallagher says that the process of exorcisms is 90% the person's choices and their willpower and 10% the actual performance of the exorcism. He explains that to relieve a person of demonic possession, the person must renounce whatever evil, dark, or magic thing that caused them to be possessed in the first place. So they have to renounce it fully. So that's what Julia was saying, that she did not want to be possessed, but she could not fully be 100%, I'm done with this. There's still a tiny, tiny part of her that was like, being possessed is kind of cool. So she knew that it wasn't going to work.
That'd be you.
She was a high priest. Excuse me?
Being possessed is kind of cool.
It's not cool. No. He also said he has seen a person relieved of possession in 45 minutes, but sometimes it takes months or years, and sometimes a person's never relieved of possession.
Years?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sometimes it's just like they do an exorcism like every couple weeks and it keeps coming back. Sometimes like the demon will be dormant for like a month or two and then all of a sudden it's back and they have to do their exorcism. It's like, it's not a one-time thing in most cases.
So it comes back like a bad rash?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. My rash is gone, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No one wrote in about that, and I was really sad.
You know, I don't blame them, because Griff's, because who cares, really?
Yeah. Where was it?
My left arm, like, in the elbow pit.
Oh, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, it was really weird. Really weird. When asked if there was any variance in demons, the interviewer in this case, he was like, can you tell the different personalities of the different demons? Mm-hmm. Dr. Gallagher said they don't reveal their personalities very much. What they do reveal is invariably nasty, prideful, and arrogant. Some of them seem sillier than others. Some of them appear super silly, while others are quite malevolent. Clearly you're dealing with different levels of personality, but we're seeing the side of them that is particularly bitter. They don't want to leave, so they lie. They are constantly trying to confuse people. Also, he said, I don't think I wrote this down, but I read it, that you have to understand that these demons know that they are being watched and they know if they are on film. So they want to confuse people. They don't want to be known.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. To skeptics, Dr. Gallagher says he's not overly concerned with convincing people. He's just trying to help. He says, quote, one can say, I don't believe in that stuff. Okay, so then what are these people supposed to do? Is basically, he's just trying to help, Like, you can say you don't believe in it, but it doesn't mean that it's not still a problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it sounds like he's not trying to get famous and take advantage of these people, really.
I don't know. I mean, he wrote a book about them. But...
Yeah, but that could be... He could have written the book just to be helpful.
Maybe. I don't know. He seemed... in the interviews and articles I've seen of him, he does seem pretty, like... Like, not showy. He's not, like, a showman. He's just like, this is true. This is what I've seen. Like, very matter of fact. He also points out that this is unusual... That this is an unusual thing to study because you can't study this in the same way as other conditions because spiritual forces aren't recognized in any medical field. So they exist in a way where they can't be studied whenever you want them. Like, if you wanted a trial subject for studying demon possession, like, what are you going to do? Like, go out and find someone who's possessed and then just, like, write down what happens? Like, it's kind of...
Irresponsible, kind of.
Irresponsible, and he says, you know, they know that they're being studied, and if they know that you're a doctor and you're trying to write down symptoms of demonic possession, like, the demon will adjust accordingly, like, either to scare you away or to make it look like nothing's wrong.
Right. No, I get that, because I always hate it in every movie that possession is, like, a thing in it. Generally, the demon just freaks out at the priest, but you would think that they would just drop the image and play it cool.
Right? Yeah.
I guess the demons in movies just aren't very smart.
No, they're not. But yeah, that's Dr. Gallagher.
Cool. No, I'm glad you did that before my story.
Yeah.
It gives a bit more background on, like, when exorcisms are necessary.
Yeah.
Okay, so, huh?
Nothing. I have two other stories I got from Reddit. The short stories that are spooky.
Do you want to save them for after me?
Yeah.
Okay.
On a dark night, you make a wrong turn on the highway and find yourself alone on a country road. You're unnerved, but the road is too narrow to turn around. As your tires crunch over the gravel, you turn the radio up to calm your nerves, and all you find is static. As you reach the end of the dial, you stumble upon a show you, nor almost anyone, has ever heard. Congratulations, you've stumbled upon the Lost Signal, a midnight sanctuary of terrifying audio plays to chill and fulfill. Find us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I guess I should ask you, have you ever seen the movie The Exorcist?
Nope.
Really?
Nope, never.
Oh my God.
I don't watch scary movies, you know this.
God, that makes me so frustrated, because that's a really, really good one.
I don't want to. It's a scary girl. I don't like it.
It's a scary girl.
There's nothing about that movie that attracts me to it. Nothing.
All right. Well, anyway, I can't say I grew up watching. I think the first time I saw The Exorcist, I was 12 or 13. It didn't scare me at all. Just because I feel like it's kind of dated. And if you've grown up seeing, like, huh?
It would still scare me.
I mean, it's still creepy for sure. It's just that I think when you grow up with more, like, modern realistic effects and stuff like that, that watching... I laughed my ass off the first time I watched it. And my mom told me this story about how when she was, like, 10 or 11, she saw it in a drive-in and she was, like, terrified and couldn't sleep for days.
Oh, no.
But, you know that the movie was shot in D.C.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm. In Georgetown, the steps, which I'm going to get to that, the famous steps from the movie that the priest tumbled down were,
Did he get thrown down the stairs?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. But cool. Those steps are in Georgetown, and later I'll talk a little bit about the way they did the stunt. I kind of thought it was cool. But anywho, all my life, my dad would say, like, well, yeah, you know, The Exorcist, like, that's a true story, but it was a boy and not a girl, and the possession happened in PG County, Maryland, not in DC.
Oh, is that true?
So, yeah. So, oh. Like, as a kid, my dad told me that, and as a kid, I was always like, that's probably just some, like, urban legend bullshit. No, I looked it up. That it's a thing.
Oh.
So, to start at the beginning, the whole thing started as rumors around town, but this much is known for sure. In 1949, a 14-year-old boy who lived in Mount Rainier, which is in PG, began experiencing strange symptoms. The family reported chairs and heavy furniture moving on their own.
Whoa, that's strange.
Uh-huh. The boy was screaming obscenities in his sleep.
Yeah, well, that's, I do that sometimes.
Well, that's normal. We can just cross that off the weird list. A doctor, a psychologist, and other experts couldn't find anything wrong with him. So the family turned to demonic possession as a potential explanation. So, a Protestant, he was first attended by his minister. So it's not just Catholics.
It's not just Catholics.
No. So first, I guess, a Protestant minister was there to check out what was up. And then later, a priest at St. James Catholic Church first attempted an exorcism. And then after that, a Jesuit in St. Louis reportedly cured the kid.
What?
So okay. It took like three different church officials to finally get him to be okay.
Okay.
The first print accounts took the exorcism at face value. Priest frees Mount Rainier boy, reported held in devil's grip.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Was a newspaper line in the Washington Post in August 20th, 1949 is when that headline came out.
So this happened in 1949-ish?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But the movie came out in 70 something.
Yeah.
In what is perhaps one of the most remarkable experiences of its kind in recent religious history, a 14-year-old Mount Rainier boy has been freed by a Catholic priest of possession by the devil.
Catholic... the Jesuit priest did it.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't line up.
Oh, okay. It doesn't
line up. So the Washington Post says it was a Catholic priest.
Who was the owner of the Washington Post at that time? I bet you he was a Catholic.
I'll leave it to you while I'm reading this.
1949 CEO.
Washington Post management. Only after between 20 and 30 performances of the ancient ritual of exorcism, here in St. Louis, the devil was finally cast out of the boy, it was said. In all except the last of these, the boy broke into a violent tantrum of screaming, cursing, and voicing of Latin phrases, a language he had never studied, whenever the priest reached the climactic point of the ritual. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, I cast the devil out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cast you out, bitch.
So, to bring it back, I guess, pre-possession, this kid was an only child who depended on adults to play with him. Which I was mad at the way they phrased that, because I was definitely raised that way, and I turned out fine.
You might be.
I guess. So, like, fuck you, article. His Aunt Harriet introduced him to a Ouija board.
Oh my god.
So that's a good sign.
Harriet! No!
Well, she died. So that's what happens. That's what you get for introducing him to a Ouija board.
Okay.
After Aunt Harriet's death, the family experienced strange noises, furniture moving on its own accord, and ordinary objects such as vases flying or levitating when the boy was nearby.
Mm-hmm.
The family turned to their... See, this says Lutheran pastor. What damn religion were these people?
Yeah, wait, what did you say first?
It was Protestant.
Jesus Christ.
Were you about to say prostitute?
No, I think I was about to say prostate.
The prostate pastor.
I was trying to say, awful. Presbyterian. Jesus, I don't... Okay. Exactly. Jesus. One of those Jesus peoples.
So the Lutheran pastor, whose name was Luther.
No, it wasn't.
It was Luther Miles Schultz. They right. called him for help.
Hey, Luther the Lutheran.
Yeah. That's great. So long interested in parapsychology, Luther the Lutheran arranged for the boy to spend the night in his home in order to observe him.
Mm-hmm.
When parapsychologist J.B. Ryan learned that Luther the Lutheran claimed he witnessed household objects and furniture moving by itself, Ryan wondered if Luther unconsciously exaggerated some of the facts.
Oh.
So Luther advised the boy's parents to see a Catholic priest.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So according to the traditional story, the boy then unwent... What?
Oh my god, I'm like that half listening.
Me. What?
No, it wasn't anything scary. Well, maybe. I'm like, I was Googling who was the, like, editor of the Washington Post in 1949. And I just read the man who was, his name was Philip Leslie Graham, and I just, like, skimmed his bio, and apparently he died by suicide in 1963, and he had bipolar disorder. So that just really shocked me all of a sudden.
That's interesting.
That's why I gasped.
I mean, I'm not saying I want to abandon this story to hear more about that guy, but that's interesting. More later.
Okay. Yeah, I have his Wikipedia.
Yeah. So, according to the story, the boy underwent a number of exorcisms. Edward Hughes, a Roman Catholic priest, conducted an exorcism on the kid at Georgetown University Hospital, a Jesuit institution.
Hmm.
And what's interesting about that to me is Georgetown University Hospital, like, that's not terribly far from where they shot the movie.
Yeah, it must have been like a local production company or something.
Yeah, which I think is cool that they kept it close to the source of the real story.
Well, I think it must have been like a Maryland, I would assume, like if it's a Maryland story and then they film it in Maryland. Anyways, continue.
Sure. During the exorcism, the boy allegedly slipped one of his hands out of the restraints, broke a bed spring from under the mattress, and used it as an impromptu weapon, slashing the priest's arm.
Holy shit, how old was this child?
I feel like 10, 11. He wasn't like a strong older teenager or anything.
Like under 13?
Yeah, roundabout.
Wow.
So, after he slashed the priest's arm, that resulted in the exorcism ritual being halted. Well, no shit.
Yeah.
The family traveled to St. Louis, where the cousin contacted one of his professors at St. Louis University, who in turn spoke to an associate of College Church. Together, both of those priests visited the child in his relative's home, where they allegedly observed a shaking bed, flying objects, the boy speaking in a guttural voice, and exhibiting an aversion to anything sacred.
Oh my, you know, so to skeptics out there, these are children, right?
Yeah.
They don't know, they haven't heard stories about possessions, right? Like, they don't know what a possession is.
Especially then, I feel like your access to like horror movies is going to be way limited.
Right. The whole
in comparison.
Like, this, well, Exorcist came out in like the 70s. So, like, that being a popular thing in pop culture didn't even start until 30 years after this happened. And so how, like, if he were faking it, how would he know to, like, do a guttural voice? Because that's a common thing that happens in pretty much every single possession story I've ever read.
Yeah, and there's only so much coincidence.
The creepy voice and the Latin? Like, that's wild. That is not a coincidence.
So from that point, the priest was granted permission from the archbishop to perform another exorcism, and that one took place at a hospital in South St. Louis, Missouri.
What? They brought him to Missouri?
Yeah, because I guess that's where you go. But before the next exorcism ritual began, another priest was called to the psychiatric wing of the hospital, where he was asked to assist the main priest performing it. Then they brought in a third priest to assist. So I guess at this point, they're really scared of this kid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I've heard of a lot of exorcisms. They have like four a people team. In the room. Yeah.
Yeah. So that way, if one gets too shaken, the other can just pick up where they leave off.
Right. And I mean, there's reports of people having like superhuman strength, and you don't want to be alone with that.
Well, during this scene, and this is something that I'm pretty sure I remember from the movie too, is that words like evil and hell and other marks started appearing on his body, like under his skin. Allegedly, during the Litany of the Saints portion of the exorcism ritual, the boy's mattress began to shake. And moreover, the kid broke one of the priest's nose during the process.
What? How?
I don't know, but he did. And the priest told a reporter that after the rite was over, the anonymous subject of the exorcism went on to lead a rather ordinary life. Now, to get into how this led to a book and led to a movie, the next year, a senior at Georgetown was searching for a topic for a speech contest. A Jesuit priest suggested demonic possession, mentioning that Mount Rainier case. That brief conversation stuck with William Peter Blatty for more than 20 years. That's the guy that wrote the book.
Oh.
So based on that conversation 20 years ago, or 20 years prior, in 1971, he published a fictional novel which changed the victim to a 12-year-old girl and the location to Georgetown and gave the parents a divorce and the priest a crisis of conscience. The book was a bestseller, and 2 years later, Blatty was hired to adapt his own book into a screenplay. The movie, directed by William Friedkin, did even better, nearly topping the box office for the year and becoming a seminal horror film. The story had now moved into the popular consciousness. So no, the priest did not take the spirit onto himself and leap out of a window down a steep staircase.
Is that what happened in the movie?
Yeah. There was no head spinning all the way around, no projectile pea soup, and no sexual use of a crucifix. None of that was real.
There was sexual use of a crucifix in the movie?
I really need to make you watch that
movie. I don't want to.
As the case was discussed again, local lore established the address as 3210 Bunker Hill Road, where a three-story house once stood. The house was either torn or burned down. Mm. Furthering the urban legend was the fact that the house no longer stood and was then the site of a small city park with a gazebo. That park became known as Exorcist Lot or Satan's Lot, and some local parents reportedly won't let their children play on it.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
All they because built this nice park. Rumors. They built this beautiful, nice park there, and all of a sudden this movie comes out and ruins it.
But here comes the press again. An article in the Prince George's Sentinel on October 28, 1983. Demonic possession still haunts Mount Rainier residence.
Oh, no!
Listed the address and included a photo of the lot.
No! Why did you do this?
I know, I wouldn't have done it. A May 6, 1985 article in the Washington Post. Damn you, Washington Post. Youth's bizarre symptoms led to 1949 exorcism. Repeated the address, citing that article in the Sentinel.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so was that the article you said in the beginning?
No, that was the one in 1983.
Oh, okay. Oh, 1983.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, it was
the
not
first article was back in the 40s when the original story was first happening.
Gotcha.
But as before, the story lost something along the way. A local historian researching the case in 1999.
Wait. Sorry, continue. I won't interrupt you.
You got really excited.
Because the guy, okay, so, oh my god. So you said that a Jesuit priest was the guy who kicked the demon out.
Yeah.
First. And then in the post, it said Catholic. So I was assuming that whoever was the publisher was probably a Catholic, and he wanted to claim that it was a Catholic.
Yeah.
This guy was a Lutheran.
Maybe he didn't want his religion to have anything to do with demons?
That's a good point. Maybe it'll look bad.
Interesting.
And the Lutheran was the Luther, who the first guy, who was like, y'all need to see a Catholic about this.
Yeah.
So it sounds like Lutherans do not fuck with exorcisms too much.
I don't think, well, think about all the lore you've heard your whole life about it. It's always Catholics, that's a Catholic thing.
Yeah.
They have a flair for the dramatic. It's got to be Catholics.
Well, have you seen the Vatican? A flair for the dramatic is an understatement.
I've actually always really wanted to see it in person.
It's insane. I didn't really want to go. I was kind of like, we'll look at the outside. And then we went into like their museum, and it's just like my jaw was dropped. It's just so big and like insanely dramatic, like that's the word.
Yeah.
They are dramatic people.
No, I grew up going to Catholic services. I know what you mean. It's like their cathedrals are always like bigger than life.
Yes, they are.
And the stained glass, and even just the I guess this, not just the symbolism, but almost the theatrics and the way that you perform a service.
Yes, it's theatrical. And you know what? I respect that, because if you have to go like every week, I want something interesting.
To be honest, like it, because I haven't been to church in years unless it's like a wedding or a funeral, but that's the one thing I miss about the occasional time I would go to Catholic church is like the drama was fun.
Yeah.
And the theatrics were fun.
I like that.
Even when the Jesus wafers aren't really good.
Well, that's something they needed to fix.
Yeah. But just to wrap this up real quick, a local historian that researched the case in 1999 made a convincing case that the boy and his family actually lived in a cozy bungalow in Cottage City, and that the Bunker Hill Road address was wrong, and the boy faked demonic possession.
Wait, what?
So there was some, there was
how
a local,
he know that?
I don't know, but this guy was like, hey, just so you know, that wasn't where he lived, and he was totally faking it.
How does he know?
I don't know, but he done said it, and then
who's this fucking guy?
Who's this fucking? He's not Luther the Lutheran. What does he know?
Give me this man's name and address. Oh, my dog's jumping. Oh god.
And then some locals also had their own version of it, but that's kind of it. I thought it was cool that it was based on a thing. But before we wrap this up, I need to tell you something cool about the movie.
Okay.
So the stairs, and I'll show you. I'll take you there next time we're ever in DC together. But these stairs are steep, and imagine being thrown down them for a stunt. It has to be pretty scary.
Uh-huh.
What they did was they put a half inch of padding on each step, and the kids at the university charge $5 a pop for students to watch the stunt from the roof.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. Like, that's hey, fun. we're filming this movie. Who wants to watch this guy get chucked down this flight of stairs?
Oh, I would. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I want to get chucked down some stairs.
But it's really weird just because when you watch the movie, that area is so unsettling. And then when you go in person, whether it's during the day or at night, you just see people jogging up and down like college students having their exercise. And you're just like, really? This is the same place that freaked me out when I was watching this movie?
Yeah.
Weird.
It's just some stairs.
But anyway, that's all I got. But I thought that you would find it interesting.
I don't.
You don't?
So he was actually relieved from possession in Missouri, the kid.
Yeah, and supposedly, like, he went on to live a normal life, got married, had a few kids, and he moved. I read one of the articles I was looking at when I was researching this. He moved back to the area.
Hmm.
Like, he decided to live out his retirement back in D.C.
Okay.
And, like, I guess once the demon was gone, he was fine forever.
Yeah. Huh.
Right? So there can be a happy ending.
And he was, like, 10. That's wild to think someone
so young. I think he was, like, right around the, like, puberty-ish age.
12-ish.
I think. But okay. As you're telling your smaller stories, I'll fact check myself.
Do you want to hear my scary stories?
Yes.
So both of these are from Reddit. r/ paranormal is so good.
Oh, okay. The kid was 14.
14. Okay. Well, okay. Like in the midst of puberty. He could have just been going through really hard hormones.
He wasn't possessed. He was just horny.
I mean, puberty's a weird time for us all.
It's true.
This story is from Reddit from user Make.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ma Kella Marie. Makella Marie. Something like that. The title of the story is called My Friend Got Possessed. When I was in high school, my friend moved into a farmhouse that had a barn and a basement that the stairs that lead to nowhere. Grammar in this isn't perfect. It's a Reddit story. The previous owner killed himself in the barn because the resident told me to, according to his letter. It said the resident told me to. When moving into this house, my friend would never step into the barn. Not once would she even walk towards it. We thought it would be fun to have a séance because we were young and stupid. We had the candles and everything. I was sitting next to Katie, the one who lived there, and all of a sudden when asking if whoever was there could show themselves, Katie then squeezed my hand so hard, the candlelight wavered, and she turned her head so slow to meet my eyes. What she said I will never forget. Let's go to the barn. Someone there wants to talk to us. I let go of her hand and stood up. My other friends there turned on the lights and she blinked at us. What happened? She said. To this day, she can't remember that night. A week after our seance, her dad was found in the barn. He shot himself, and in his letter, he said, I'm sorry, I had to listen, as if something told him to do it. This is a true story. It could have been coincidences back to back, but it will scare me nonetheless.
Yeah.
Isn't that scary?
I don't like that.
Horrifying.
Whether that's actually true or not, I don't like that.
So something was in the barn getting people to kill themselves.
No thank you.
Absolutely no thank you.
Like, that to me, that's more terrifying than, like, you know, someone wanting to harm me is to, like, make me want to do it to myself.
Oh, right?
Because then you've lost all control to fight back.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Do you want to hear the next one?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm waiting for you, man. You're okay. Good.
This was posted by Mew Mew Bitch.
Mew Mew Bitch.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. Let's go.
Title is Ghost Possessed Me?
With a question mark.
Yeah.
All right.
I love this story. So last night I was awake, just thinking to myself. Then this man appeared in my room. A short, bald man that kind of looked like Eminem, but older.
Was he just... a poop wizard?
No.
He Sorry, I was bringing like it M&M. Back.
No one wants to hear about the poop wizard anymore. Leave it alone. I'm trying to forget it every day. He kind of looked like Eminem, but older. He just stood there. Black t-shirt, black hoodie pulled over his head, and dark jeans with some beat-up sneakers. My jaw dropped open, and before I could shout for him to leave, my jaw was stuck open. I couldn't close my mouth. My whole body was paralyzed, and I couldn't even begin to force myself to move, but I was shaking almost like a seizure. I could feel myself cry, though, and I felt strong gusts of wind coming out of my mouth, like the man was telepathically taking my soul from within me through my mouth. In my head, I kept telling myself, you are strong, you are powerful, no one can take this from you. And eventually, my whole body jolted, and I was thrown across my bed. The man was gone, but I was still paralyzed, slowly regaining movement in my fingers, then toes, nose, and carry on, and then on. My jaw was the last thing to get control of again, and I immediately ran to my brother in shock, heart beating fast and frazzled from the experience. What does this mean? Have you had experience like this? It definitely wasn't a dream. I was wide awake on my phone minutes before. And in the comments, someone was like, it sounds like sleep paralysis. And
they were like, I was just thinking that.
Well, the person that posted was like, I've had sleep paralysis before, and this was not it. Like, I was awake is kind of wild.
Huh. No, I'm fucking terrified of sleep paralysis. I'm very thankful that it's never happened to me.
Oh, no.
That's terrifying, and I am not happy about that story either. Like, I just don't want to go to sleep.
Have you ever had night terrors?
No, but actually, an ex of mine used to have them pretty frequently when he was a kid. And his mom used to tell me, like, it was terrifying. Because he would be screaming bloody murder in the middle of the night.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
This one time, I was at this dude's house doing adult stuff. And afterwards...
Oh, so reading comic books?
Uh-huh.
And having snacks in bed?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I love that life.
And after... I think he was just trying to get me to leave, but he was like, I have night terrors. And I was like, that's fine. And I went to bed, and it wasn't until the next day that I was like, he was trying to get me to leave his house. He did not have night terrors.
You fucking insensitive asshole. What if he was serious? I have night terrors and I don't want you to witness that. And you're like, oh, it's fine.
That's what I said. I was like, I don't care. I'm tired. I just fell asleep. I think he was just trying to get me to leave.
Damn. That's a pretty creative lie.
Harsh. Ouch.
I wouldn't have thought about that.
That's fine. I stayed there anyway. I didn't care.
Hello.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Rebecca.
And we're the hosts of the...
I have a strange story podcast.
We didn't do it.
We'll see.
Listen in as we retell your personal paranormal stories.
We've got Bigfoot, we've got aliens, we've got skinwalkers, and we've got movie references. Listen in every week as we retell your paranormal stories with comedy, cussing, and class.
And sometimes coffee, and sometimes cats, and sometimes beer or wine, and sometimes cats in trash cans.
Okay. Catch us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Bye.
Bye.
Well, are you ready for your shitty cryptid soon?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I get excited when it's my turn to pitch it to you.
Can we just talk about demons more?
No.
Ugh.
We have to talk about our sponsor this week.
Okay.
Okay, so this episode is sponsored by Excellent Ears & Company. And that's an Etsy shop featuring fun and festive Mickey ears, pins, and jewelry for plenty of fandoms. Especially as a Star Wars fan, I know I love this shop because there are Baby Yoda earrings in there.
Thank God.
Yes.
Oh, he has a name now.
No. I'm waiting for the whole
second. You haven't watched
it? I'm waiting for the second season to finish so I can binge them all.
No, you have to watch it, Erica. I'm telling you. It's so good.
I know. Just like Andy and I were trying to like binge the whole second season. Anyway, quality products and fast shipping. Support small business this holiday season by checking out Jesse's shop. Not you, Jesse. My friend Jesse that runs this shop.
Not me, Jesse. Your friend, Jesse. So not me.
No, you are best friend / podcast host.
Don't
Jesse.
Lie to me. I'm not your friend.
New earrings and jewelry are being added to the shop daily. Need something custom? Don't be afraid to send her a message, as she's always happy to work with you for you to get exactly what you want. And for the Etsy link, Facebook, Instagram, all of that will be on the episode description. So thank you, Jesse. Not you.
You're welcome.
And time for the shitty cryptid.
Tell me the Etsy name again. What's the name of the shop?
It's Excellent Ears & Company, but if you go to Etsy, it's etsy.com/shop/excellent ears. You want to check it out?
I'm just browsing for a second.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, you should, because her stuff is so cute. God.
I just saw a Greta Van Fleet keychain, and I want that.
That's one of her favorite bands.
God. And she's Jonas Brothers stud earrings. Shut up. Yeah. She knows me.
She does.
Are we the same person?
Maybe it's a Jesse thing specifically.
There's a Bill and Ted.
Yeah, that's where she got the name Excellent Ears.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure the tagline on her Etsy is be excellent to each other.
Yep. You're correct.
Yep. She is very cool.
She is very cool. I can, now that I've seen the shop, I can concur that she is very, very cool.
Yes. So give her some business and tell her that we sent you there. Are you ready? Because I'm, like, real excited.
Oh, yeah.
Because this happens to randomly be very appropriate for this episode.
Oh, okay. Is it about demons? Just tell me.
It's the purple atheist pope of Mount Rushmore.
Oh my god, I love this.
So, the purple atheist pope of Mount Rushmore.
Oh my god. What does that mean?
How could that be any more perfect?
The
episode where we talk about The Exorcist.
Oh, he's an atheist pope.
The purple atheist pope of Mount Rushmore.
All right, I'm thinking. Okay, all right. Inside Mount Rushmore, there's a secret entrance up the nose of Thomas Jefferson. And inside, you will find a beautiful, large underground tunnel system in which the leaders of atheism reside.
How are there leaders of atheism? Atheists don't believe in God at all.
I will tell you. They can still have leaders. The reason that they're hiding is because atheists generally don't believe in one central power in general, so they don't want to be known that they exist. But their mission is to send out, like, viral social media campaigns.
About what?
Atheism.
Oh, so, like, hey, Facebook noticed that you don't believe in God.
Exactly. SEO. Search engine optimization. It's what they're good at.
Religion is a cult.
Exactly. And we're not. We're not a cult, even though we have a secret underground tunnel system inside Mount Rushmore. And the tunnel under, did you know that inside Mount Rushmore is basically like a massive geode system that holds amethysts? So the light reflecting inside the tunnel systems is all purple. And this is where the Pope of Atheism has his main office, in which he is very good at Google Ads.
So he's like the amethyst atheist pope of Mount Rushmore.
No, he's purple. He's purple. They call him the purple atheist pope. They're like, hey, purple pope.
Is that his whole shtick? Is like he's just really good at Google Ads?
Yeah.
But like, tell me, what are like the founding pillars of atheism?
God doesn't exist. That's mostly it.
So he's spreading the good word of nothingness after death.
Exactly.
I kind of get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like I said, he has to do it secretly. That's why he's inside Mount Rushmore. And I was thinking, like, how does that make him a cryptid? And I guess he is a cryptid because he's, no one knows about him. Does that make him a cryptid? Is that close enough to?
I guess, but who else is on his committee?
The purple atheist cardinals. The purple atheist priests, the purple atheist choir boys,
They have a fucking choir, but they're supposed to be secret.
Yeah, they sing like, God doesn't exist. God doesn't exist. That's what they do. We are purple choir boys, and the God doesn't exist. That's how it goes.
I love that song. That's my favorite hymn. Is a hymn a song, right?
A song about God, so it can't be a hymn.
Oh, anti-hymn.
There you go.
You said a hymn is a song about God, so it can't exist. It's so basically, it's like he's the leader of all, like, atheist missionaries.
Yeah, but he doesn't have missionaries because...
It's just, like, within the Church of Nothing.
Exactly. And that's why he has to use search engine optimization to do that. To like, subtly influence your... Like, if you Google something like, does God exist, all of a sudden on your Facebook and Instagram, you just start getting ads that are like, don't believe in God? Click this link. And that's what happens.
Does the purple atheist pope pay for, like, premium ad space?
Oh, yeah.
Where did they get their money? Sorry, I'm asking like a lot of questions.
Probably from, oh man, that's a good question. From all the amethysts. He sells them. They're an amethyst mine.
Does he have an Etsy shop?
Yes, he has an Etsy shop.
I'm dying because he's like the master of the internet.
Yeah.
And I guess his philosophy is like, well, obviously when you die, nothing happens. So I'm just going to be really good at marketing.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, well.
Why would you not?
I give you so many points for this one. That was actually really good considering I thought it was a really shitty premise that I gave you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wow. Well, thanks for listening, friends.
Yes.
And if you have any questions, shoot it over to us at paranerdspodcast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Definitely, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, rate and review us. Mm-hmm. Share, spread the word, because we want more people to listen.
Yeah, let us know if you want to sponsor an episode. Shoot us an email.
Yes. And thank you. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Paranerds Podcast has been brought to you by Podmoth.